둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here, for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button. That way, you keep up with all the interviews that we send your way. Three brand new ones every single week. That's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover the new ones. You can grab us at Spotify, at Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget to also give the show a rating, leave a review if you feel so inspired as well. We've had some great guests on lately, including Maya Hawke. Spike Ferriston was here. He co-wrote Unfrosted with Jerry Seinfeld on Netflix. Brent Smith of Shinedown, documentarian Sarah Dowland to talk about Sue Bird in The Clutch. Katie Crutchfield from Waxahachie was here. Kevin Bacon and the Bacon Brothers. Scoot McNairy, he's starring in Blood for Dust opposite Kit Harington. Mike McCready and Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam. Dave Wakeling of The English Beat. Beth Ditto of Gossip. Skeet Ulrich from Scream and Riverdale. Just an example of what you get and what you'll see when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest is writer, director, producer, Prentice Penny. You'll also know him as the showrunner behind the series Insecure from HBO. Today, we're going to be talking about the Hulu docuseries Black Twitter, A People's History, which charts the rise, movements, voices, and memes that made Black Twitter an influential and dominant force in nearly every aspect of American political and cultural life. Prentice is going to talk about why he wanted to tell the story of social movements created by the people who found a community on the social media site, how their narrative advanced when Elon Musk bought Twitter while they were filming the series, and why Twitter might be the most influential advancement in the last decade's social history. Penny's also going to discuss how the filmmakers gathered the folks behind some of the site's most famous hashtags, like You Know Your Black Win, Black Girl Magic, just to name a couple, how black people will still find community in the post-Twitter environment, and what it all might mean during an election year. We talk about all that and more. Let's jump into it. Black Twitter, A People's History. It's Kyle Meredith with Prentice Penny.
Nice to meet you, too. Nice to meet you, too.
We were talking about the backgrounds. It's a very sweet background you've got there.
Yeah, my grandmother was a Sinatra fan, so I became a Sinatra fan, so I'm a big Rat Pack, so it's all wallpaper. But I love your background too. That's awesome.
Oh, how do you feel about the news with Leo and Sinatra?
I'm curious about that. I saw that thing about Scorsese and Jennifer Garner, maybe. I was like, that's interesting. I was like, okay.
Yeah, I'm reserving judgment. It could be great. I'm feeling the same thing about Chalamet right now with Dylan, because I'm like Dylan, very big Dylan fan, and nothing against Timothy Chalamet, but it's like, okay, I'll reserve judgment. Maybe it's going to be great.
Who would you, in your mind, who would you say would have been the right person?
I don't even know. It's, the thing is, with Dylan, like, there have been some good Dylan movies that he has helped produce. Mm-hmm. I'm Not There, where he had like six different people playing him, you know, right. Throughout the eras. I thought that was really, I mean, he, you know, he's such a weird little enigma as a cult figure,
yeah,
that it almost is like you have to do something like that to get to the base of it. But if they're concentrating on this one little moment in his life, then, you know, sure, why not? Like, I'm like, yeah, not against him,
right? Just,
I can't see it, I can't hear it yet,
right? Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah, and Leo's the same way. It's like, talking about Leo and Sinatra is like, I don't know that I would have ever considered Leo as Sinatra.
I get it though. Because when I think about Sinatra, I think about, like, what person as an actor, if you were to say, has captivated the world at various points, I would say Sinatra's that guy. And Leo, I mean, we can certainly talk about, like, the girls of it all, right? Like, there's certainly, like, that kind of level for Leo that I'd go, like, I don't know, if there's not a better role for him to step in to be the coolest ladies man out there. It's pretty much like, hey, man.
Well, that's on that side. So that means they're probably going to cast the rest of the Rat Pack. I mean, maybe, right?
Like, yeah, unless it's like, I mean, I'm sure they'll probably have some role, but it doesn't sound like it's really about them. So it sounds like it might be more of the Sinatra time. I mean, I'm sure there'll be actors who will be playing those guys, but it seems like it's not really about that. I'd be curious to see, like, what is it about too? Is it a whole length of time? Is it a specific moment? You know, what are we talking about? Because obviously there's skinny Frank and then there's, you know, more mature Frank. So I'm like, Leo's not playing skinny Frank. That's Timothy Chalamet.
That's Timothy Chalamet. He's going to do them all.
He's going to do everything, man.
I'm gonna get to the main point at hand here with Black Twitter. But I've got to, but so Sinatra, like, I love Sinatra. I don't know Sinatra. I know a lot. So I'm going to ask this without knowing if I've got the answer myself. But, you know, do you have the go-to album? Do you rank it like that?
I don't rank it like that. I love certain songs that Frank has. Like, my favorite Sinatra song is I Got the World on a String. That's like one of my favorite Sinatra songs, like, ever. I mean, obviously there's the big ones like My Way and all that type of stuff, but I Got the World on a String is like one of my favorite. It's like, I can listen to that all the time.
What's the divorce album? The Quiet Morning, Lonely Hour. I've just blanked on it.
Yeah. Yeah. My grandmother used to love the early, I didn't realize as a kid when I'd watch like those Bugs Bunny cartoons, that was like Frank Sinatra. I was like, why is this skinny guy? Who's this skinny guy? Women are like fainting over. And then my grandma was like, oh, that's Frank. That's kind of how it started, was she was a Sinatra fan. And in the cartoon, I'd be like, who is this? Whatever. And she was like, oh, that's supposed to be Frank Sinatra. I was like, who's Frank Sinatra? And then obviously, there we go.
Looney Tunes taught me a lot in the same
Looney
way.
Looney Tunes, man.
I was just yesterday wondering how old Buster Bunny, what, because you have dumb thoughts in your, yeah, in your day. Like, and I thought, how old is Buster Bunny in real age now? And I did not answer that. So it's,
yeah, no, there's no way to know.
And we'll be right back right after this.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Prentice Penny. Anyway, let me ask you about Black Twitter on Hulu. This fantastic documentary. I knew about Black Twitter. It never would have occurred to me in the same way. It's like the way you all have painted this contextualized so much about the last decade, things that we all know, things that we've all experienced, but finally putting it in this frame, I don't mind saying it blew my mind several times over throughout three episodes.
Thank you.
And, you know, so it's in there in the title, it suggested anyway, but my first thought was the book, The People's History of the United States, and how that retold our history through the lens of
so many different minorities throughout. Like, here's the history not told through guys that look like this right here.
Right.
And reading that and how eye-opening, it was as eye-opening as reading that when I was younger was. I know this is the easy place to start, but how did this arrive? Why did you want to tell the story in this way?
So, I was active on Twitter and obviously other social media, but certainly active on Black Twitter for a long time. And, you know, one of the things I find interesting, like, as you're talking about the history of the United States, I'm old enough now where I remember the first election that I remember my as a kid was Reagan Carter. And I remember my mom being so irate about Reagan coming into power and Carter being gone. And I've had enough life now where I've seen every president be a reaction to the previous president, right? Which is like, oh, you see how Clinton's a reaction to Bush and Reagan. You see how Bush is a reaction to Clinton. You see how Obama's a reaction to Bush. You certainly see how Trump is a reaction to that, right? And for me, I've learned that like America is a big cause effect. And we kind of repeat these things, right? On these pendulums. And so when I was looking for something to do post Insecure, I really wanted something that would scare me again in a way that kind of scared me and being creative again. And I wanted to do something that would kind of separate whatever I did before that. And I kind of wanted a line of demarcation from the things I was going to do now at Onyx from what I had done previously. And I knew whatever I did, if I did a scripted show right after this, it'll be immediately compared. I started thinking about the way people think about albums. Like, okay, well, how do I going to do this album slightly differently than what they expect of me to do next, right? And so I thought about people like Spike Lee, who had obviously done a ton of movies, but had started to do like When the Levees Break and obviously like Four Little Girls and kind of veering into things that felt in the doc space. And for me, when this article came out, it just reminded me of everything that I had felt about the country. It reminded me of everything I remembered about Black Twitter. And it felt like this was a subject matter that I could participate in. It didn't feel like a foreign thing I had to like. It's about a Himalayan monk that I got to now get into Himalayan monks. It was like, oh, this is the thing I organically participate in, but doing it in a doc space is the thing that feels new. So that's really what drew me into it was it felt exciting. It felt right now. And one of the reasons that I think also too, that, you know, Jason wrote the article because he felt like so many things on the internet are here today and gone tomorrow. And as a result, you know, obviously like Friendster and Vine, we talk about that in the doc, but we had no idea when we were making this doc that Elon was going to buy the platform. And so to have the doc be exactly why Jason wrote the article, because it I mean, for all intents and purposes, Twitter is gone, right? And the literally like the platform could be gone whenever, if he decided to ever turn it off, he could do that. And there would be no record of what we contributed culturally and politically and in the tech space to the world. And so it feels so prophetic, but at the time it just felt like, yeah, it feels like the right amount of distance to do it. But now it's like, oh man, this is crazy.
The timing, unfortunately, as you're saying, one of the things I took away, I was thinking about right at the end of it too, was that so often I will say when people, my wife or anybody is like, you know, that the internet is just weighing down on them, that, you know, the stuff they're reading and all that. And I was like, it's not real. None of that is real. None of those people are real. None of the things that, you know, it's just like, but this doc, I'm going the exact opposite way because of what you're saying. Like, the things happen, the narratives happen, you know, the reflection of America happened because of these very real people getting together in an online community. And that's sort of, I mean, you know, I hope it doesn't sound like hyperbole because I think you guys come close to maybe almost saying it. Like, Twitter in the last decade might be the most important revelation, you know, in our culture. Is that accurate?
I think it's super accurate. And I think one of the reasons why it's super accurate, we get into this in the doc too, is like, you know, so much of, you know, driving culture in this country is predicated on either A, access and resource, right? And then deciding whether or not I choose to listen, right? So for example, like you can't go talk to a president back in the day if you weren't a big donor. There was just no way some guy from, you know, Connecticut or Kentucky or wherever could just go sit and talk to the president, right? And certainly no way that they would talk back. He's just, like, so disconnected, right? And also there are so many ways in which, like minorities and cultures of color might have their own publications, right? Like Essence and Ebony and Jet and several others in other communities. But if you're like a white dude from like, you know, Chicago, and you're just like, I don't want to read Essence magazine, then you don't, then you don't have to participate in many conversations, right? But what Twitter allowed is like, it's taking money out of the equation, and you're kind of forced to hear a conversation you may be able to isolate yourself from in your real world. But in this digital space, you kind of can't really run from it because it's going to dominate the conversation on the platform. So there is this sort of level of a democratization that happened on the platform because neither finances nor isolating yourself is a possibility. And I think that's why it was so impactful, because it took money out of the equation and it took, I don't want to hear it out of the equation. You kind of had no choice but to hear it.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Prentice Penny.
I can't remember. Maybe I think the very first time I even heard the term Black Twitter, because the other side of my professional life, I help run a public radio station here in Louisville. And as we're public radio, we get away with, you know, all the different, and we play a lot of Erykah Badu, you know, next to Pearl Jam. Yep. Or whatever. And I was talking once on Twitter, and I think I mentioned something about Erykah and Peebo Bryson. One of my coworkers said, I thought Peebo Bryson only existed on Black Twitter here. And it was like, and I knew exactly, like, that moment is like, I understand exactly what you
mean. How about the Peebo Bryson? That's awesome.
But it was kind of learning that. And as you're saying, suddenly that realizing those conversations that I can see, you know, I might not be BET's prime target, but suddenly here it is right here in the conversation. And now knowing, as you're saying, what it's become, I even love in the documentary, like, I'm only going to call it Twitter. We're not getting in the same way, by the way.
I think if we called it Black X, it might isolate some more people anyway.
But, you know, but it is, it's like what it meant to journalism.
Yeah.
And how we put our trust in these places. Like, that's also the thing. Like, what's your take on that? Because I think about when people first start really complaining about Facebook and the misinformation.
Yeah.
And Twitter is the same way. It gave this online community, gave a place, as you're saying. But at the same time, we put our trust in these places, almost like we have ownership, and it can just go away.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was the thing that, like anything in like anything in life, right? Somebody tells you this is what it is, you believe it at kind of face value, right? Like, because you're like, well, there are people smarter than me that clearly can put this together, so they must have this already figured out. And they just didn't, right? And there's ways in which they were, you know, when people are your commodity and that's the way you're making money, you're incentivized to keep more people around, right? That's just, why would you get rid of the way that you're making money, right? In essence, right? And so I think like anything, right? There's a system and then you learn how to hack the system. You go, oh, what are the loopholes of the system, right? We see people do that with taxes. We see people do it in, you know, like coupon. I mean, people do it at the grocery store. I get this coupon, I can sort of hack the system, right? And I think the way that we were all sort of having this conversation and these things that were happening is there were ways in which you could hack that information. It was ways you could manipulate that information. It was ways you could say, oh, I'm a part of this community, only to be told that later, like, that was a bot, right? But if you're not aware that those things are, people are even playing, and that's what I think the people realize. There are people playing at this level, and then there were people playing at a higher level who understood, like, really, the way Black Twitter was driving cultural conversation in the country, and they didn't like where that was going. And they put things in place to mess with that. And I think that's what you saw it. And certainly Black people in this country are often told, you know, your voice doesn't matter, your vote doesn't matter, your influence is really just here in the States, not overseas. And actually what we saw was quite the opposite, right? Is that, you know, other countries and other superpowers were threatened by that and threatened by where this is going. You know, certainly seeing Obama become president is certainly, and Hillary being the next one up, is certainly a move to other countries that if they don't like people of color and women are starting to be the people in charge of America, I don't like that. We need to get involved in that. And so I just think, like anything, you start to hack the system of a thing that up until that point, you were seeing the fruits of, right? You're seeing the fruits of organization and protest and change, and you're seeing the fruits of that. But I think, and so you believe, like anything, it will continue. Oh, the fruits will just like in the housing market. Oh, the houses will keep going up and up and up and up. It'll never bubble. It'll never burst, right? It's like the assumption that things will continue. That's like what I forget the thing. It's like when people gamble, it's like the assumption that good luck happens, that good luck will continue to occur. It's like, that's not how it actually works, but that's how our psychology wants to believe. And I think that's what we were seeing in the country at that time, was our psychology wanting to believe that we're continually, that progress is a straight line. And as we often know, it's not a straight line, right? It has lots of twists and turns to it. And I think we were in a straight line for a long time and didn't see the twists and turns that could start to come.
I try to keep an optimistic view when it comes to that right there too, because talking about like culture and politics and news weighing down on you, it's the reminder that progress, it's called progress. It means it continues. And it's not always fast, and sometimes it's slow, and sometimes it. But in the history of our civilization, eventually it has always won. Mm-hmm. And we have these pendulum swing moments of resistance.
Yeah.
That we seem to be in, especially in this last, you know, 5-10 years or more, or forever. I don't know, but it's a tricky way of saying that. But you know, like I still do have that optimism, because just. If Black Twitter and this community doesn't exist in this spot, like people will find people.
Yeah, I think people. Yeah, I mean, I think our community always finds. I think one, like minds always find like minds, right? In essence, right? And I think our community, I think specifically because we were brought here and immediately separated from each other. You know, husband and wife, like mother to child. That we always try to find a way to reconnect roots and reconnect to community. I think that Black Twitter was just the way it existed at that time. It existed, I think, in the birth of hip hop at a certain point of like, oh, this is like a serious, like-minded group of people. I think it existed digitally over here. And I like to think that like Black Twitter sort of left the matrix in a lot of ways. Like I like to think that Black Twitter is an energy in the world now that's just like an energy of accountability, an energy of like we're not taking the shit we used to take. Like I just think that is bigger than it being on a platform anymore. I equate like if you came up in the age of Black Twitter, the idea that you can't voice your opinion when you see something wrong is crazy. Whereas my grandparents might have a Karen, seeing a Karen might have a different, well, let's just leave her alone. Let's not blah, blah, blah. Whereas today it's like, oh, I'm going to film you because you're crazy. And I'm going to figure out who you are and you might lose your job. Like that, those levels of like growing up in a time when you feel protected in a community, right, brings a different energy to your adulthood, which then you raise your children with a different energy, right? Then just be quiet, just assimilate, just get along, because that's what you had to do to survive then, right? And I think we're talking about the difference between surviving, right? And thriving and living, right? And those come with two different point of views and two different attitudes. And I think you're seeing a post Black Twitter energy, which is about how do we thrive and not just survive, but how do we thrive and live and engage and embrace our own power and our own strength, you know, without it feeling I have to shrink as a result of that.
I'm only picking up on one thing you said back there, and I'm picking up on the most trivial thing, because there are these great fun moments of this series too. We're talking about a lot of big subjects. The fact that you had the Mount Rushmore of Karens.
That was fun. That was fun to do the Mount Rush. It was a lot of debate on who goes out there. But I feel like those were the perfect people to put up there.
Those are pretty great. But you put together like the all-stars of some of the greatest, you know, Twitter moments of all time, of hashtag moments of all time. You know, maybe it's just reaching out to these people, but you know, and you put them together at this table and they all get, and like, I don't know if there's anything to say that we didn't see on the screen, but I would love to hear about that.
Yeah, I mean, those moments were great because they didn't know who was going to be at that table. Because again, like part of the Black Twitter world is like, obviously there's the people you know, which are the people that we were talking to in the article, which are like, I'm a professor of here, I was a part of this. And obviously there's, you know, people that were, you know, people who work at Twitter obviously are in that too. But also it's like Black Twitter is also made of like, just random people wherever, right? And it's like, you know, like people who weren't trying to be, you know, famous or weren't trying to be, we're just like, I'ma just tweet, you know, Oscars are so white, or I'ma just tweet, I believe black girls are magic, not knowing that that was going to be a hashtag. Or, Squint Bay, who now is a meme, was like, she was just rubbing her knees because she was taking a picture. And then now she's a popular meme that people use all the time, and she'll never not be, right? And so for me, it was important to have those people also be a part of the doc, because they were in it. Like, whereas our interview subjects, some of them are in it, but some of them are commenting on what was happening. I wanted to also have people who were in the middle of it as it was happening in real time for them. And that was just as important, because that's who makes up Black Twitter too, right? And so to have the person there that's just tweeted Black girls are magic, and like, now that's to have them reaction to that was just great. Like, those moments were just incredible. But we had a lot of moments we couldn't put in. Like, we had like when Queen Elizabeth passed away, and sort of watching, there was a one thing we had about Black Twitter and Irish Twitter teaming up on those. So it was like little moments like that, like, we couldn't like finagle those moments in because they were kind of like outliers. But no, we had a bunch of cutting room floor stuff that was like great.
Fourth episode, that's all it is. That's all it takes is a fourth episode. That's... but of course, here we are. Here in that third episode, we arrive in the present, and what does that mean for this election? Like, what does that mean for what it's meant in the past and how we move forward? Like, do you have that sense?
I'm curious of like what if people seeing this doc in this election cycle specifically, right? Because there is a sort of history could repeat itself, right? And people, obviously there's a lot of stuff that we get into in the second episode about Trump and, Trump being a reaction to Obama and Black Twitter in a lot of ways and the energy around that. But I have no idea where this is going. It's so bizarre to turn on your TV and see the former president involved in another hush money scandal and to be like, well, that could be the guy, I guess. I have no clue. I guess presidents just can have hush money cases now. That's what's up. So it's just interesting to like see it all play out again, having made the doc, to go, I really don't know which direction it's going to go. I really cannot tell. I can't tell. People are like, we're not going for that again. Or we might. I just, Americans are interesting people. So it's interesting watching, having done the doc. It's almost like, when somebody trips and falls and they kind of fall in slow motion, like they kind of stumble and then they grab something and you're like, oh, they're going to make it. No, then they start and you're like, I can't help them and I'm too far to kind of help. So they're kind of falling in slow motion. That's kind of what this election cycle feels like, having made the doc. It's like you're sort of watching America start to fall in slow motion and you're like, I don't know how to help this.
As long as those voices are heard in the same way, that's the most important thing.
That is the most important thing. I agree.
And I so appreciate, I really do, I so appreciate this documentary that you all have made. I learned so much from it. And it's funny and it's entertaining at the same time. And I know that's hard to do. Congratulations on this. I seriously mean that. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it.
No, I appreciate you. Thank you for having me.
And my thanks to Prentice. Black Twitter, A People's History, out now on Hulu. Thanks to you, of course, for checking out the episode. Again, hit that subscribe button before you get out of here so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Spotify, at Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org. Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or again, anywhere you get your podcasts from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. After that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where you'll find me Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. I give you 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There's bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Linda Lindell, David Bowie, Reverend Horton Heat, Warpaint, Tom Petty, Bruce Springsteen, Dionne Warwick, Tara Jane O'Neill, George Ezra, Cage the Elephant, Sonic Youth, Pretenders, U2, Sheryl Crow, Lady Blackbird, R.E.M., Blur, The Jam, Olivia Rodrigo, The Last Dinner Party, Lenny Kravitz, and my interview with Peter Frampton. Again, just an example of what you can hear every weeknight starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.